Hey everyone, welcome to the Relevant Leader Monthly conversation. Help the leaders relevant to become highly effective influencers. I'm your host, Ronnie Rothy. Hey, I'm so proud of you guys for tuning in to invest in yourself, grow as a leader. I'm excited I get to host the episode this month because joining me today, I have a very special guest, Damon West. Damon was a keynote speaker at the Elkhorn Leadership Breakfast that we put on earlier this month. Good morning, Damon. How you doing, brother?
Man, Ronnie, I'm great, brother. It's good to be here, man. First of all, I want to tell you that Leadership Breakfast was amazing. I mean, I could not believe how many people turned out for that thing. It's like, you know, we're planning, and we planned it for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
And so it's like to see it all come to fruition and see the kind of event you'll put on, dude, top notch, man.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
It's fun to do, and it's fun to, you know, provide that for leaders in our community. So honestly, thank you again for being here. And dude, I'm pumped you're going to join us for the Relevant Leader Monthly. Thanks for taking the time and doing this while you're in town, man. I really appreciate it.
Dude, I nowhere else I've got to be right now, so let's do it.
Yeah, man. You don't catch a plane for quite a few hours.
So here we go.
Hours, yeah. So first time I heard of you was 2 years ago when you were a guest on Jim Rohn's Reinvention podcast. Since that time, man, I've just had an opportunity to hear you in a lot of different contexts, read one of your books. I'm actually excited to read The Change Agent. I haven't read that yet, so I'm looking forward to that. But your story, your message, it's helped me be more influential in life and leadership, and I'm excited for you to share with all of our leaders today. So first, Damon, let's just start off. Just tell us about yourself, about your family, about what you do for a job, just where you're at currently in life.
Yeah, so I guess the best way to identify myself is I'm a keynote speaker. I go around all over the world now and share my story. You know, mainly the story is about overcoming adversity, and it's about hope. It's finding those opportunities in the most difficult situations. Because take the story of my life, which has some adversity most people probably never go through, like prison, and you add to it the application of the coffee bean message, and that kind of gives people a formula for, like, hey, if that guy could do it in that situation, I can do it in my situation too. It brings people a lot of hope. But no, it's good. I mean, look, I mean, first thing I would do to identify myself is say I'm a grateful recovering addict. I'm in a program recovery. I mean, you know, I tell people that because anything I put in front of my recovery, I'll lose. I've done it before. I've failed miserably in life. I failed completely in life. But outside of that, you know, I'm a husband. I'm a stepfather to a little girl named Clara that's 10 years old. Just got a
best-selling author.
Best-selling author.
Yeah, don't forget that.
Yeah, I mean, college professor. I've got a movie deal where I'm working on. So there's a lot of different things, a lot of different hats I get to wear, man. Philanthropist, one of the things I like doing is my foundation. So, yeah, a lot of different hats I get to wear. But above all else, I think it's because servant leadership, about finding ways to help other people out. Because I truly believe that when we're serving other people, that's when the good stuff happens in our lives too.
Yeah. And I'm excited to get to the story here in a second, how you got to that place. But first, just tell us about yourself growing up, about your family growing up, school, college, what you went to do college for, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I came from a great family. I mean, like I tell people all the time, my mom and my dad just celebrated 54 years of marriage.
That's great.
I mean, didn't come from a broken home. Didn't have, you know, those kind of issues growing up. Had everything, actually. Everything a kid could ever need to become the best version of themselves. And I did in a lot of ways. I became I was a star athlete in Texas, Texas high school football, big thing down there. It's like a religion in my home state. And I was a 3-year starting quarterback for a 5A school, scholarship to play football at the University of North Texas. By the time I was 20, I'd won the starting job. I was a Division I starting quarterback at 20 years old, man.
Awesome.
I mean, it's like, yeah, so I kind of thought I was living out the dream. That was my purpose. My identity was being a football player. But your identity can't be from something external. It has to come from within. Because we can lose ourselves if we lose our identity because something happens, and that something happened to me. I lost my identity when I got hurt in college, playing college football. My career ended prematurely, and when that happens, I got into hardcore drugs to change the way I felt. I couldn't deal with life on life's terms, and that's kind of the hallmark of addiction, is we don't want to live life on life's terms, and I got into cocaine, ecstasy pills, that kind of thing in college. I was a very functional addict. Graduated from college, went to work in Congress, guy running for president, worked for one of the biggest Wall Street banks in the world, UBS, United Bank of Switzerland. And, life up until that point in 2004 when I worked for UBS, you know, I got a lot of breaks in life. A lot of things went my way, or I could manipulate, I thought, my way into most things. But I had an encounter in 2004 that was something more than I could handle, something I was not equipped for. And my life and the lives of so many other innocent people would forever be changed in 2004.
Yeah. So, you know, knowing where you are now, knowing where you grew up, like you would never imagine where you are now or knowing your story growing up, that there is this whole huge season of your life in the middle that you actually wouldn't be where you are now without that season of life. And unfortunately, that season of life was not easy. Your football career ends, you start on drugs, your life goes to a downward spiral, and it ends up in a horrible, horrible place that most people just can't imagine or even believe that it ended up. So tell that story, man. You start doing drugs, your football's over, and where you ended up.
Yeah, man. It's, you know, the thing about it is, too, so Ronnie, I look at it like this, like, everything in life happens for a reason. Life doesn't happen. Like Ed Milet likes to say, life doesn't happen so much to you as it happens for you.
Great quote.
And so, yeah, and you know, everything that happens in life, even the bad stuff, is preparing you for something bigger in life. I could never have known back then that, you know, becoming a meth addict in 2004 when another broker introduced me to meth and the downward spiral I would go on, which about 18 months after the first hit of that meth, I was homeless, living in the streets of Dallas, you know, breaking into cars, breaking into storage units, becoming a criminal around meth, and then becoming the leader of a burglary ring in the city of Dallas. And these burglaries were called the Uptown Burglaries, and they went on for about 3 years. And, dude, this is a guy, man. You're looking at a guy that had it all, man. I was, you know, everything that you could imagine a person trying to accomplish in life at a very young age even was there on the doorstep of it, but the introduction of meth into my life was completely radicalized everything that went on. And I became a different person around this meth.
Oh, yeah.
And I tell people all the time that most addicts are not bad people. They're sick people that do a lot of bad things in pursuit of their drug. And I was one of those sick people that did bad things. Didn't hurt anybody physically, but I hurt people in different ways. When I broke into people's houses, I didn't just steal property. I stole their sense of security. You know, I don't know if they'll ever get that back. But after 3 years of committing these property crimes against the people of Dallas, a Dallas SWAT team on July 30th, 2008, put an end to they called them the Uptown Burglaries. That was a crime spree.
It was a big deal.
It was very
big.
They
were after you.
Yeah, it was a very big game of cat and mouse. And look, I mean, this one, cat and mouse, because, I mean, I would drop evidence off from these burglaries in neighborhoods I didn't want the cop. I'd rather the cops looking at than my neighborhood that I was living in the dope house I was in.
Yeah.
Stolen cars that came from people's homes where the burglaries committed, you know, dropped off in neighborhoods that would take the scent somewhere else. So when I say it's cat and mouse, you know, there's an element of my story that's like, there's a, you know, you ever seen that TV show called The Wire? I mean, it's just, there's a lot of element of a criminal trying to be evasive because that's what criminals do.
Yeah.
But they finally caught me. Like they catch most criminals because most criminals like me were stupid. We make a lot of mistakes along the way. And
SWAT team shows up.
SWAT team shows up, man. I mean, just dramatic SWAT team raid. They take me down. They take me to Dallas County Jail. But man, the whole time I'm in Dallas County Jail, I'm sitting there I've got one thought going through my head. I just want to get out and get high. And that's it, man. It's an obsession inside me, man. And I know I got to go to this trial and I'm going to face these crimes. But look, man, I'm Damon West. I can talk my way out of anything. I've always been able to dodge any kind of responsibility in life. I've never been a person that's responsible. I've always been very selfish.
Yeah.
And I figure I'll get out of this one. I figure I'll get probation. You know, just like, you know, all the other, you know, white middle-class guys that have come before me that didn't have a felony conviction. The blueprint's there. I've got two paid attorneys. I'm going to go to this trial. I'm going to get probation. I'll be getting high that night when I get out.
That's not what happened. So tell a story about where that took you and how you got there.
Yeah, man. So this trial I went to, man. So I was arrested July 30th, 2008. SWAT team got me. May 18th, 2009, which is about 10 months after my arrest, the jury is listening to this case. I've been brought to trial, and the trial lasted 6 days. 6 days is a long trial, brother. I mean, it's a grueling process to go through a trial, and most trials were a couple of days. This one lasted six. The evidence was so overwhelming. That's why it lasted so long.
Wow.
And the jury hated my guts when it was all over. And they went to deliberate, that day for the sentencing for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, they just spent 6 days, over 100 hours listening to testimony, and took them 10 minutes to come up with their decision. They knew what they were going to do when they sent. They knew what their sentencing was when they left that day. And so I came back in the courtroom and...
You're like, this is not going to be good.
It's not going to be good. No, it's not. And my lawyer told me, get ready. It's going to be bad. And it was. The judge read the sentence out. 65 years in prison.
Oh, wow.
Which is a life sentence in Texas. So that day, I tell people all the time, May 18th, 2009, that wasn't just the day I was sentenced to life in prison. It was my rock bottom moment. The day that I realized that something had to change and that something is me. But I don't know how to make this change. You know, Ronnie, I'm not there yet. I don't even know. I remember that night when I went back to my cell. You know, you can't cry in a place like prison. You can't show that kind of emotion. So I go back to my cell, and I mean the pod where I live on, and this stuff has been on TV, so everybody sees me walk in, and everybody's looking at me like a dead man walking. I just got life, and all these other no one's even get around me. I think they're afraid they're going to catch a life sentence. You know,
yeah.
So it's like don't get near this guy. So I walk in, I go grab my shower stuff, and I head to the showers in county jail that night. And I got in the shower that night, May 18, 2009, and I started bawling, man, and crying. And I'm like, Jesus, I can't do this anymore. I don't know what to do. Will you take me back? And it's like, dude, Jesus was sitting there going, I got you, brother. Come on. Not like, hey, you did all this stuff. You turned your back on me. You've been gone this many years. And all these times I tried to reach out to you, you didn't say anything back. There was none of that, dude. It was just like, let's go. And that was it. That was the day that, you know, I gave my life to Christ, and I started trying to live in the solution, but I didn't have all the answers at that point. I just knew that I had to surrender, and that was the first step.
So you get the life sentence. You're getting ready to go into prison, not, you know, maximum security prison, and... It was there that you learned a principle that ended up changing your life. So when and how did you learn this principle?
Man, there was a guy in Dallas County Jail, this older black man, Muslim guy, which is proof that God can send any kind of messenger to you. Yeah. It didn't have to be someone that looks like you or even believes the same things you do. This is a black Muslim man from the streets of Dallas, Texas. We could be more different if we tried. I'm a white, middle-class Catholic guy from a little bitty town called Port Arthur, right? I mean, so the thing we have in common is that we're both human beings, but outside of that is where we stop. But he took a liking to me, he took a kindness towards me, and he wanted to help develop me and get me ready for prison, and which is really, I still say it's a divine thing, because in that environment, the racial thing is so, like, heavy inside prison. And he told me that race is the biggest factor in there. And he's a Muslim guy on top of that. So it's like we have nothing in common. But he sees me and he helps me and he gives me this principle to let me understand what prison's going to be like. And it was the first time I've ever been explained something that was that crystal clear. And I remember the day he told me, I just picked it up. And he said, do imagine prison as a pot of boiling water. He said, we're going to have three things we're going to put in this pot of boiling water and watch how they change. A carrot, which goes in hard, but the water turns soft. An egg, which goes in with a soft liquid inside, but the water makes that hard on the inside, like your heart becomes hardened. Or a coffee bean, which changes the pot of boiling water into a pot of coffee. And he said, if you want to survive prison and come back out the other side, a better version of you, you have to be a coffee bean. And man, I remember those four words just bounced. I mean, like, just like one of those aha moments, like, be a coffee bean. If I can be a coffee bean, then I can not only just survive this, I can thrive in this environment. And I gotta tell you, Ronnie, I mean, it was just in time. That message was just in time, because prison was the biggest pot of boiling water you can even imagine. The most dangerous thing I've ever been through in my life, the most insane environment you can even imagine. But he was right. No matter what your environment is, you have the power to change that environment. It starts within you. You have to change you first, and once you change you, you can change the world around you, and that's what I did.
Yeah, so, you know, as any of us in life, you know, we experience situations, circumstances that are the pot of boiling water. And our leadership, and, you know, as the, you know, our leaders who are listening, who they're leading the teams, they're leading in the groups, they're leading, and even leading in homes and at their work, and, you know, those leadership environments can be like pots of boiling water. However, you entered the ultimate pot of boiling water, and you
So, okay, I got to learn how to be a coffee bean and not a carrot and turn soft or an egg and turn hard, but a coffee bean that influences the rest of the community and the rest of the culture. Dude, you're in the most crazy. So, bro, how did you learn how to do that? What was the ups and downs of that in prison? How did you not become soft or hard? Like, how did you become a coffee bean? And what did that look like in the most intense of environments?
Yeah, so the becoming a coffee bean, it didn't start out like that. I didn't come in there and just, it was easy. I didn't know how to be a coffee bean, to be honest with you. You know, just because this guy tells me the story and I get it, there's still the idea of how do you do it? How do you become that coffee bean?
Yeah.
So the first couple months of prison was just this violent baptism by fire. It was just fighting all the time. I probably got 36 fights the first 2 months, lost 75% of my fights. I mean, I'm fighting every other day.
Yeah.
I'm getting my butt kicked all over the place. But
real quick, so I remember you one point in time talking about Mr. Jackson, not only telling you about the coffee bean thing, but telling you something about fighting.
Yeah.
What did he tell you about fighting before you went into prison? Because I think this is so key, really, in every area of life.
Absolutely. But no, and it's apropos. We definitely need to include that in. It's that he told me you don't have to win all your fights, but you do have to fight all your fights.
Wow.
And what that means is, like, you know, Ronnie, some days you're going to win and some days you're going to lose. And really, it's okay to lose. It's not something you want to aspire to, but it's something that's going to happen in life. No one wins all their battles in life. We learn a lot from our losses, too. If we're there and we're willing to be a sober learner in that environment, we learn about our losses. We learn a lot about ourselves. But when we sit there and say, you know what, I'll take the losses and I'm going to get back up and keep fighting, then you have a different mindset of how you're going to handle your adversity. I went into prison without the expectations now of trying to win every fight.
Yeah,
I've removed expectations that were unrealistic from my life. And a lot of times in life, when we have unrealistic expectations and we don't meet those unrealistic expectations, we get further and further into this rut because we have this mindset that we should be something bigger or greater than what we are. And the reality is, man, everybody fails. Everybody gets knocked down, you know? But we have to get back up. And that's what Jackson keeps saying, get back up. And that's what I had to do. The first couple months of prison, it was just fighting. Yeah, I mean, it was the gangs. First it was the white gangs, then it was the black gangs, you know. Then it was out there in the rec yard, you know, trying to use my athletic ability to earn some respect in there. And it took about 2 months in prison for the violence was finally over and the threat to my physical safety was gone. And I got a chance to really start working on becoming a coffee bean. And the first thing I had to do, I can tell you this for sure, was I had to get over the anger that I had inside, because that's one of the hallmarks of being an egg. And I think you find more eggs than you find anything else in life. You're going to find a lot of more people that are just miserable, mad, and you know, irritated all the time.
Resentful, bitter.
Yeah, resentful, bitter. Yeah, these are hallmarks of being an egg, and that's where I was. And I had to let go of all that. And that was part of the whole thing of getting to a program recovery and surrendering. The first step in my 12-step program recovery is, you know, you admit you're powerless. And the first three steps are really about surrendering to your higher power. Mine's Christ. I'm a Christian. So I had to surrender to that and had to believe that that higher power, Christ, could change me. And I had to figure out a way to let God take control of that, let Christ take control, like literally like give the keys up to the car to let him drive. Mm-hmm. Because the last time I drove the car, I parked it inside of a prison. So. Yep. It's like, you know, I can't do good driving this car. I need you to drive it. And there was a lady in prison, this volunteer chaplain lady named Ms. D. And Ms. D, one day in the chapel, broke it down for me what the secret to faith was. And this was really helpful for me to turn my life around because it took the idea of control away from me. She said, if you're going to pray, don't worry. And if you're going to worry, don't pray. Because you can't have it both ways. You're either going to let Christ do his job or you're going to keep trying to do his job for him. But the thing is that Christ doesn't need us to do his job. He's got that, you know. Get out of the way. You have to get out of your own way sometimes. And that's what I had to do to become a coffee bean. I had to get out of my own way and focus on the things that I really could control. And there's four. There's really just four things that we give, you know, that we're given to control each day. What we think, what we say, what we feel, and what we do. What we think, what we say, what we feel, what we do. And here's what I found out, Ronnie. If I would just focus on those four things, then I'm using my time in a valuable way. Time. Man, time is the most precious resource you have. Once this stuff is gone, that's gone for good, man.
Can't get it back. Yep.
You can't buy one more second of it.
Nope.
And I started using my time in a valuable way. Now I'm focusing my time on things I can't control. What I think, what I say, what I feel, what I do. Now I'm reading the right books. Now I'm doing meditation. Now I'm praying. Now I'm physically working out. I'm changing myself. I'm looking for ways to serve others because these are things I can control. That's staying in my lane. One of the best terms I've ever heard in prison is stay in your lane. So I started staying in my lane and working in my lane. And once I got it to my lane, I took off in the fast lane.
Yeah. So you're not in jail anymore, which is crazy. Like, yeah. Dude, you got 65 years. You got a life sentence
yeah.
in Texas, but you're sitting with me today in Omaha, Nebraska. So, how in the world did that happen?
Man, look, I mean, the easy answer is that I made parole, and parole is a deal they can do to let you out of prison early. It doesn't mean you're done with your sentence. You're just done serving your sentence inside of a prison.
Yeah.
You get a parole officer you report to in the free world. But the real answer is that God opened up a door for me that only God could open, because nobody makes parole their first time on a life sentence, not 7 years. For a non-aggravated life, non-aggravated meaning that no one was hurt during my crimes. I never saw my victims. There's no physical victim.
Yeah.
For a crime like that, you usually do about 10 to 15 years. That's about your range of punishment that you're going to do inside of a prison. You do the rest of it on the street.
Yeah.
But 7 years, they let me go. And I've been out, right at 7 years now. 7 years, they let me go. And I was shocked. I was a little bit stunned that they even let me go. But whenever I walked out of prison, it was November 16th, 2015. I remember...
A day you'll never forget.
No, a day I'll never forget. Exactly. I mean, because it's like... And what was weird about it is, like, your mind can play tricks on you, or your mind has this power over you. When I walked out of prison, the first step I took, the ground felt different underneath me. Hmm. The sky was bluer.
I bet.
The air was lighter. The only thing that separated me from any of this stuff I'm feeling is a fence that I could see through, right? A chain link fence. But on the other side of it, it felt different. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling that. I remember going through all this stuff, your sensory overload. But I also remember a voice saying, turn around. And it's God. I turn around. I look back at the prison behind me. And God is literally telling me, Damon, I'm about to do something in your life that your life's going to be amazing. You don't have any idea how big this is going to be, what I'm about to do in your life, because you're going to work for me. And as long as you're working for me and this is about me, then you're going to have the most amazing life. You're not going to believe what's about to go on in your life. But the minute it becomes about you, the minute it becomes Damon's show and not God's show, this is where I want you to see you're coming back to.
Yeah.
So literally, I've got my marching orders right the first steps out of prison, man. I mean, and as long as I can keep that in the forefront of everything I do, because I do, I think about when someone messages me on one of these messenger apps for social media, says, hey, Damon, my son, my daughter, whoever is an addict, will you talk to them? My response is always, yes, here's my cell phone number. And people are shocked to give up my cell phone number like that. And the family members are calling me like, I can't believe you responded. I'm like, I have to respond.
Yeah.
You see, this is the thing that I told God I would do when I got out of prison. But here's why I have to respond, too, is because I'm afraid if I don't do what God needs me to do, you know what God might do? Like, damn, I got the wrong guy out.
Yeah.
I mean,
you didn't learn? You got to go back?
Yeah, I thought you were working for me. You're too tired? You're too busy? I mean, how can that be if you're working for me?
Yeah.
I got the wrong guy. Maybe I need to go get someone else out of prison and put you back in. So I'm like, hey, God, I got it, man. You just keep sending me people. Keep sending me everything you got, and I'll keep doing it. Now, I'm getting busier, so sometimes it takes me a little bit longer to get everything done, but I make sure I get it done because that's why I'm out.
Yeah.
I believe that's one of the reasons why I'm out.
So, dude, so you learn this, you know, Mr. Jackson, right? You're going in, you be a coffee bean, and you go in there and – How long were you in prison for then?
7 years, 3 months, 18 days. Not that anybody's counting.
No one was counting, yeah. But – by the grace of God, you're not there anymore.
Yeah.
You're still on parole for next 50 years of your life, I guess. But you're not behind physical bars. You learn this lesson, be a coffee bean. You start being a coffee bean in prison. And I'm just kind of obviously cliff-noting some of your story here. But you get out and your whole life then turns into, how do I get this message out and help other people be a coffee bean? You know, Damon, as we talk about leaders, you know, we're trying to equip all of our leaders to become what we call highly effective influencers, to have really highly effective, positive influence in their teams and in their groups. And so, Damon, the $10 million question is, there's one thing to be inspired to be a coffee bean. It's a whole other thing to actually be a coffee bean. So, Damon, how in the world, in the context of the boiling, you know, pots of water, in the context of leading in the different contexts of which we lead, of our teams and our groups and our companies and our homes, how do we be a coffee bean?
Being a coffee bean is a lot about putting in the work. When I say putting in the work, that means that you are responsible for you. And that means that every day that you have to get up and you have to have this thing called a rookie mindset. Rookie mindset is when you attack what you're doing in life the same way you did when you first started. It might be that you're a very successful person now. And when we get to some things, sometimes when we see a little success, we rest on our laurels, or the good things we've done, and we lose that drive that got us there in the first place. And having a rookie mindset, you know, I get up every day and I face life not like I'm out here as a global speaker and, you know, best-selling author. I get up every day with my mindset like, hey, remember the first day, the first days I started this, when I got out of prison, man, I was trying to go around speaking to local church groups and schools around the area where I grew up in Port Arthur, where I was living, and man, it was hard. I couldn't find anybody to let me come in and speak. I had to have a cop or a judge go with me everywhere. No one would let me come into their schools alone. I just got out of prison. But I didn't have to go anywhere to get better at speaking, because in my parents' spare bedroom in the house I lived in for 2 years when I was on my first got out on parole, their spare bedroom had a mirror in it, and every day that I wasn't speaking, which was most days in those first 2 years, I did a presentation in front of that mirror. That's how I started getting to where I am today. I honed my craft. I got in my reps in my parents' spare bedroom. Every single day for 2 years, I either did a presentation in person, which was very few, or a presentation in front of that mirror. But for every day that I was out, I was getting my reps, man. And that's part of what being a coffee bean is all about. It's putting the work. It's knowing that no one's going to do the work for you, man. And when you have that mindset that I am responsible for me and I've got to get this done, you're capable of way more than you think you are. We set a lot of limitations on ourselves. Part of being a coffee bean is knowing that, you know what, I'm not going to let the adversity get the best of me. There's two things about adversity that I learned in prison, that I'm always capable of way more than I think I am, and the adversity is never as bad as I think it's going to be, because overthinking gets in the way of overcoming. And being a coffee bean is getting that thinking out of the way, getting your thinking in the right place. The way you think matters. Your thoughts control your actions, but your actions come from your thoughts. You have to start thinking the right way to be a coffee bean.
So, yeah. So, I mean, being a coffee bean, obviously, once again, you kind of just narrow it down. It's all about positively influencing your environment instead of negatively be influencing and becoming soft or becoming hard. I know you talk about four things to do, be a coffee bean. I think those four things are just, they're simple. I mean, they're simple. They're not easy. They're simple. But they're so practical. What are those four things?
Yeah, I mean, you got your positive body language, man. You got to smile everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Man, I don't care what you're going through, what you're struggling with, smile. Because your smile, first of all, your smile is going to release these chemicals in your brain, these serotonins. It's going to start this stuff that makes you feel good. You could flood your body with these things simply by yourself. You don't need anybody around you. But your smile changes the energy of every room you go into.
Yep.
Mr. Jackson told me in county jail, you either infect the room you go into with your negative energy or you affect a room.
So good,
with positive.
Dude. So true.
Infect versus affect. Are you the disease or are you the cure? And so you have a choice every day to how you're going to impact the room. Another way of being a coffee bean is work out on yourself every day in three areas, spiritually, mentally, and physically. Every day, Ronnie, our minds, our bodies, our souls need to be worked out. This is something that's required to be not just a coffee bean, but a healthy human being.
Yep.
You know? And so many times, and I'll say this from my own life, when life gets busy, the first thing that goes in my life is the physical workout.
Yep.
You know, that's the thing I put on the side first, is what I'm on the road. People look at my schedule, and there's no one that would argue with me that, man, you are a busy guy and you travel a lot. It's got to be hard to keep up your physical workout. You know what? It is. It's difficult. And a lot of times I allow the difficulty to get the best of me and I don't get a workout in because I'm exhausted from traveling. But the reality is I've got to be responsible for that. I've got to get up no matter when it is at that hotel. If I get in at midnight, go down to the gym, get something in, or get up early in the morning. But I don't always do it because the physical part's the first thing that goes in my life. And it may be like that for some of your listeners out there, but you have to be disciplined enough to take care of yourself in those three phases, spiritually, mentally, and physically, every single day. And a lot of times I tell people that you can get a lot of this stuff in before you start your day. That's really like the best time. I know you and I talked, you like to work out in the mornings. Best time to knock this stuff out is in the mornings, man, before your day gets going, because the day goes, man, and things happen throughout the day. Servant leadership, the secret to life, man. The secret to life I learned inside of a prison is servant leadership. Servant leadership is helping other people reach their goals in life, helping to raise other people up to a different station of life and expecting nothing in return. I learned that from a lot of these men that would come into the prison on these prison retreats, these Christian men that would come in and they would minister to us. They would love on us. They would spend their time with us. Time, the most precious resource they had. These guys would give up their jobs, their homes, their families, their careers, and their lives for 4 days for a church retreat inside of a maximum security prison. Man, no one wanted to be around us, except maybe if we were lucky, our families. These men did. These men showed me what servant leadership was all about. And if these men could come in there and serve me when I was in prison, who could I serve?
Yeah. You know?
That was a big learning moment for me. And, you know, just knowing that your past doesn't define you. Your past is your lesson. The present, today, it's a gift. You got to make the most of the day, man. You got another bite of the apple of life. And the future is your motivation. And that's where I'm talking about, you know, putting in the work, man. Getting up and believing in yourself. Growth follows belief. And here's the deal. No one else is going to believe in you until they see the work from you, until they see you believe in yourself. When you believe in yourself, other people will believe in you too. But if people don't see that belief that you have in yourself, they're not going to believe in you.
Yeah. Dude, I love those four, because, I mean, when we think about being a coffee bean and influencing, you know, the teams that we're on, our cultures that we're in, the school that we're a part of, just being, you know, making coffee.
Yeah.
Those four things, and leaders, I hope you heard them, you know, just the smile, your body language, because you will inject something into a room. It's weird, you know, you say that. You know, on Sunday mornings in the world I lead, you know, pastors showing up on Sunday mornings, it doesn't matter what I feel like. Like, I know who I am when I step into the room, and it's like, if I walk around and I'm, I can just feel the room coming down with me.
Yeah.
And so, like, dude, I got to put a smile on my face. Sometimes it's just like, I don't have to act like I'm okay. You know, I just need to smile, and it can just inject positive. So, you know, I'm just reiterating what you said, that put a smile on your face, take care of you. Can't have healthy influence if you're not healthy.
Yeah.
Servant leadership, and then being fully in the present, looking to the future instead of letting your, you know, being defined by all the stuff in your past and bringing into the present. Dude, I love that. Okay, leaders, if they're like, Damon, if you could go, guys, you know, if every leader listening right now is like, Damon, I want to be a coffee bean. Those are great four steps. I'm inspired to do this. Like, what's just one way I can start? Like, if you were to be sitting with anyone across from the table today and go, man, here's the one thing I would tell you here's how to start being a coffee bean right now today, what would be that one piece of advice that you'd give to all of our leaders?
Okay, so here's the big nugget I'm going to give you here.
Yep.
It's these four spiritual principles that I learned in my program recovery.
Okay.
And I tell people about these all the time, because I don't think that just people in recovery should have this. I think everybody should have. This is where it's at, man. This is the gold here. Four spiritual principles I have to live my life by. And this is for me to stay sober and for me to be useful, which is that's what I told parole. The lady for parole said, if you could be remembered for being anything, give it to me in one word, what would it be? It's useful. Because I think human beings, we all want to be useful.
Yeah.
At the core of being human, we want to belong and be loved. Mm-hmm. That's what everybody wants to be as humans.
Yep.
And when we can find a way to belong and be loved, we become the best versions of ourselves. But here's what I have to do every day. I have four spiritual principles I plug every single decision into. And look, I say I do. I fail at this.
Oh, for sure.
I stumble,
yeah.
I fall,
right.
I get back up.
Yep.
I'm not perfect. I go for spiritual growth, not spiritual perfection, right?
Exactly.
So, but I'm always trying to grow spiritually. And these four spiritual principles: unselfish, honest, pure, and loving.
Unselfish, honest,
pure, and loving. Every decision I make, I ask myself, Damon, is this unselfish? Is it pure? Is it honest? Is it loving? And if it's not those four things, I can't do it. Here's why. Because if it's not those four things, it's on the other side of the spectrum over here where the bad stuff is. It's selfish. It's self-seeking. It's self-want. It's self-desires. It's self-delusion. Yeah. That's where your ego gets into play, where that voice in your head starts telling you you're pretty unique and you're pretty good. And yeah, you don't have to do it everything like the way everybody else does it because you're Damon West. And no, to get outside of self, I have to become unselfish, honest, pure, and loving in all of my endeavors. I have to plug this into every phase of my life. And here's the other part to that is everything in your life is connected. When I say everything is connected, your work, your leadership, your family, if you don't give it your all in one of those other areas, it brings everything else down with you. If you're a married person and you go outside of your marriage and you think that's not going to affect your business and your leadership, you're delusional. This is where the side of the spectrum, selfish, self-seeking, self-desire, self-delusion, this is where it all comes into play. Everything is connected. You got to take care of everything in your life the way you want to take care of the goals you have in your career and your professional life too.
It's so good. And I was just thinking when you were talking, like when it's any of the selfish, self-delusional, I don't know how you can't in the pot. I don't know how you can't turn into an egg or a coffee bean or an egg or a carrot because you're focused on you. And the more focused on us, we're either going to get soft or hard. Like the only way to influence anyone else is that self is not at the center.
One of the best things I've ever heard, it was in an AA meeting one time, and somebody said, you know, if we could all throw our problems onto a pile, then we could go up to that pile and we could pick up someone else's problems. Chances are really good you go back up and grab your own problem out of that pile and throw it back over your shoulder and keep on going. Because once you see what other people are struggling with and dealing with, you don't want their problems, you know?
Yep.
But we have to get outside of ourself to become someone who – when we get outside of ourselves and we say, hey, look, you know what? I'm going to help someone else and their problems. I'm going to help, you know, help them out. It gets you outside of this tunnel vision that you get that things are so bad in your life. And perspective is something that we all have. We all know what a bad day looks like. And most of the time, what you think is a bad day is not a bad day. It's an event that's happening with your mind right where you are right then. When I got out of prison, I didn't have any of this stuff going on. And my sponsor saw what was happening to me. And he said, you're about to go back to prison. This is like a month out of prison. I'm like, well, what do you mean? I don't want to go back to prison. What do you mean by that? He said, because you're living inside yourself. He said, you have to get outside yourself. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do, man? No one will let me in. I can't get into schools. I can't do, you know, I'm an ex-con. No one wants me around. He said, now it's self-pity. This is all the self stuff happening.
Yeah.
He said, you need to find some service work project. You have to go out and serve other people or you're going to go back to prison. So he said, I said, what am I going to do? No one wants me. He said, that's not true. He said, go to a senior citizen's home. He called it an old folks home. He's not really PC. So, but he said, go to a senior citizen's home, go to the front desk, ask them for a list of people who never get visits. He said, they'll give you this big long list because a lot of people in there have been forgotten by their families. He said, they live in an institution and they're lonely. You know what that feels like. He said, go to a senior citizen's home and go visit with people. Take your whole Saturday and just spend 20 minutes with each one of these people. Just keep going back to back to back and have these visits. And then come tell me about what your worldview is then. Hmm. And, man, I went and did it, and it changed my life.
Yeah.
Because I went to spend time with people who hadn't had a visitor in 8 years or 10 years or 15 years. No one sat and talked to them, and it made me realize how good my life was. I got to live in someone else's problems, and it got me outside of my own.
Dude, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm assuming, let me see if I'm hearing this right. If you were to wrap everything up, being a coffee bean, how to do it? It's about one, servant leadership. Would you narrow it down to that?
Sure. When you're serving other people, you know, this is the thing. You're not looking for anything in return.
Yeah.
You're just saying, you know what, I'm going to be a servant, and I'm looking for ways to serve other people. And if you're doing that and other people are doing that, guess what? The days that you're down and you need help, someone's going to be looking for ways to help you.
Yeah. Well, Damon, dude, thank you honestly for your time and really just being here and for helping us just influence our leaders and equip our leaders. And I know this message, a simple message being a coffee bean, there's so much complexity to it. It's simple, but there's so much complexity to it. And it's something I think about a lot. Usually every day I feel like I'm failing at, but I want to take steps toward. And so really this was just good for me today. So thank you. Where and how can people connect with you and cause you put out some great content and I want people to get your books. And so where and how can people find you, connect with you, find your content?
Yeah. Instagram and Twitter is at Damon West 7. Of course I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and all that. You can find me Damon West on there. My website is damonwest.org. That's where people go to find me for speaking events, stuff like that. And my books can be found anywhere books are sold. Amazon, Barnes & Noble's. You know, they're anywhere books are sold. But look, I would tell you also on your point, man, thank you for letting me come today. This, honestly, Ronnie, this is how I stay sober. You know, by sharing my story and going out and pouring into other people, I get to stay sober each day. You know, a guy that runs the Texas prison system, I told him I wanted to go into every prison and visit every prison while I was out. He's like, man, we'll do it. We'll work with you. We've never done that with somebody that was, you know, in our prison system.
In prison before, yeah.
He said, but man, I've just got to ask you because I'm around inmates all the time. They're always trying to run game. They're always got an angle. He said, what's in it for you? I laughed. I said, man, I get to stay sober. And he said, that's a good answer. And I said, that's the honest answer.
Yeah.
That's the deal, Ronnie. By spending time with you today, pouring into your people, doing this podcast, I get to stay sober. So thank you for the gift of sobriety today, brother.
Oh, brother, it's an honor having you here. And dude, your story is amazing. And really, whatever it means coming from someone like me, I mean, you know, we just met personally yesterday. But, man, just watching someone like you say, I'm going to want to follow Christ, glorify God, and just watching you stay sober, man, I know that's a fight. You know, I don't even understand what that fight's like every day of that type of addiction. And so, dude, just great job. I think your Heavenly Father's really proud of you, man.
I appreciate that, brother.
Yeah. So, leaders, I just want to encourage you, like, you know, Damon covered a lot today, just would ask you to ask the question, what's one next step you can take? Like, just, man, one thing you can apply from this conversation, I'd encourage you to take it. Take that step because great leaders are the hope of our church, which means you are the hope of our church. Once again, make sure you follow on whatever platform you're listening to so you can get it every month. And make sure you join us again as we have another conversation about how to help all of us become highly effective influencers. Leaders, go be a coffee bean. God bless you guys.
Awesome. Thanks, bro.